Well, hello everybody, and welcome to our Rays and Initiations webinar commentary number 80. We've been making some progress here as we began this particular attempt after we had done 33 or 34 of these, so we have a lot to study, very definitely. We ended with number 79. And let's see, today is the 3rd of March. I guess we ended yesterday somehow. 3rd of March, 2017. And Master DK said, well, he had given us a lot of food for thought. He went over the fifth ray in a summary, basically. He gave us those 15 counsels on the fifth ray. The relationship of the fifth ray to the fifth root race was considered. The relationship between rays 2 and ray 5 in various ways was considered. The three major areas of thought which are produced by the fifth ray were considered: science, philosophy, and psychology. And the discussion of the law of cleavages in relation to the fifth ray was offered, or at least a notation of it. But it's not about separation at this point. It's not about separativeness. It's about, I call it analysis within the field of synthesis. The great conditioning ideologies have the fifth ray behind them. And the fifth ray makes possible the first major initiation, the first solar initiation, the transfiguration initiation. And in connection with the personality, the fifth ray works as a transmuting agent within the physical body, as a transforming agent within the astral body, and as a transfiguring agent within the mental body. Within the mental body. Okay, so now we may be, here he says then, this gives us much food for thought. It indicates the personality goal and the mode whereby it is attained. Which, if you think about the, with gratitude, you know, these teachers have gone on, but they revolve upon the pedestal of light and turn the other way and then send the energy into the darkened space where such as we are still struggling. And the way is not so dark because of the light which they transmit. After the third initiation, we reach out in consciousness to higher expansions of consciousness and will then enter a realm of ideas which are not yet easy for the disciple to appreciate or to understand. And so he tells us that much that he will have to say about ray energy and the higher initiations will mean little to many, but it will mean much to the initiate consciousness. The world initiates will be coming into incarnation at this time, so this is written in the 40s, and will read my words towards the end of this century with great understanding. Well, that was the 20th century, and now we have emerged already 17 years into the new century. I wonder if we all remember where we were when the year 2000 turned. I seem to have a better recollection of where I was when the great decision was made in Libra of 2001. But anyway, the world initiates will be coming into incarnation at this time and will read my words towards the end of the century with, well, I tend to say, he says, great understanding, and for the likes of us, let's say greater understanding. Okay, so now, number 80, and we get on to the fourth initiation, which is ruled by the fourth ray and the heart. It has four chambers, we remember, and it does represent the cross, and at the first fourth initiation, the symbol of the cross is paramount, as it has been in Christianity. The crucifixion, was taken upon the cross, not the Aquarian cross, it was the long-armed cross, more of the Piscean age, but the Aquarian cross is coming. So this is the energy of harmony through conflict. Our study today is of profound interest and has a great bearing on the present world situation. And why is that? You know, let's just say there, whoa, that's my old, that won't do, will it? Have a little insert from the Sabian symbols there, that won't do. Okay, so let's just say the planetary logos is passing through a kind of fourth initiation in this scheme, well, as to say, in this chain, and particularly on this fourth globe of the fourth chain. So I would like to make clear, he says, two important facts. One, the fact that the World War 1914 to 1945, and who knew it really, going into such hopefulness in the beginning of the 20th century, that the World War was quite unavoidable, though the conflict might have been retained upon mental levels had humanity decided rightly. And you kind of wonder when we're going to stop blundering into these very wasteful wars because we don't have enough sense to, or enough mentality to fight it out on the plane of thought and the plane of ideas. So there was a cleavage there between the old and the new, a cleavage between the old and new, and there had to be a decision in favor of the new, which largely, after all, there was. Okay, so two, that's a important point, the unavoidability of the Great War. Now, sometimes the First World War is called the Great War, the war to end all wars, but after all, DK looks at it as one continuous war from 1914 to 1945, parts of which may have been fought out interiorly. And you kind of wonder, you know, is a third world war, which would be decisive for the externalization of the hierarchy and the reappearance of the Christ, is it unavoidable in the same way? And can we retain this, in a way, even greater conflict upon the mental plane? I mean, now we really have the means to destroy humanity, and at the time of the earlier two wars, we did not have that possibility, although there were some atomic weapons near the end of the war. They were so few, not proliferated as they are now, that humanity would not be destroyed. Now we have a huge decision before us. The second point, the fact of the inevitability of the return of the Christ in this era and in the relatively immediate future. A lot of people look to 2025 as if that will be the time, but let's just say in 2025, the real beginning of the process occurs in a practical way. So there is an inevitability. Now, you know, when this was written, had the Christ yet made his decision that he would return in physical form? He did make such a decision eventually. Or was he merely, well, I shouldn't use a word like that, was he to descend to the etheric level and oversee the situation and the transformation from that point of view. It was finally decided that it would be a physical reappearance, and as I understand it, because of that very sacrificial decision, the great mantram of light and power, the great invocation, was released to humanity in 1945. Well, we are here dealing, he says, with immutable law. You know, it's out of the Bhagavad Gita, whenever there is a withering of the law and an uprising of lawlessness on all sides, then I manifest myself, does it say from age to age? Well, manifest myself for the upliftment or salvation of those who do good and the destruction of those who do evil. It's a pretty close translation there. So we are here dealing with immutable law, for the energies of the various rays move under laws. You know, they have their inviolable cycles. Although we are, there is an adaptation going on now with regard to the fifth ray. So from 1950 to at least to the year 2000, that ray has been removed from its direct impact and made, and the way it reaches humanity now is subsidiary to the third ray. Well, it says here that humanity can therefore do naught but accept, determining only what I might call the locale or sphere of activity of both of these major events. So humanity's decisions, will have much, goodness, to do with the where and to a degree the timing. The when, you know, because there has to be a certain achievement within humanity before it's possible for the Christ really to reappear. So I'm going to call this to a degree, a qualifier. Okay. So, but, you know, Sanat Kumara intervened here, and at least since he has control over the ray lords in Shambhala, he decided, due to an assessment of the condition of human morality and the speed with which the fifth ray was being assimilated, to withhold the full impact of the fifth ray. But again, humanity has nothing to say about that decision and had to simply accept what was given. Who knows where we would be? Science fiction seems to tell us what we might achieve, but perhaps we were, could be closer than we ever imagined to achieving many of those things, including such a destructive potential as to make our present day weaponry, as awesome as it is, look relatively antiquated. People are always working on ever more destructive weaponry, not realizing that, of course, it could be used, or not taking in sufficiently, the fact that it could be used to annihilate humanity. Okay, just a moment, please. Okay, so we will continue here. It's out of humanity's hands. Whether this is caused by the cycle of a ray lord, or by the amendment of that cycle by the planetary logos or Sanat Kumara. The determination of mankind to fight out the issues involved in the world war upon the physical plane at the same time automatically determined the sphere of Christ's activity as I shall attempt to show you. Now, this is very interesting because, let's just say, it is, if I'm understanding this correctly, it is, that's not the correct paste. Okay, so, it is as if, because the war was fought out physically, that the Christ had to make his reappearance physical. At least that's the way I'm understanding it at the moment. Let's see what the Tibetan says. In many ways, this particular instruction is one of the most important I have yet given because of its essential and obvious implications in relation to the fourth kingdom of nature, humanity, and all the fours that are occurring at this moment. We will therefore study the fourth initiation and its relation to the fourth ray of harmony through conflict. It's pretty interesting how the rays go 7, 6, 5, 4 when we're considering first initiation, second initiation, third and fourth, and then they switch to the first ray, which offers the revelation of divine purpose. Okay. This fourth ray, as you have several times been told, is out of incarnation. As far as the reincarnating egos or souls of men are concerned, we might say there are a few. Okay. There are a few, and DK pointed them out in relation to the United Nations, for instance. But not many. In a strange way, it began to come in 1924, even 1925. He discusses that, the entry of a kind of a fourth ray cycle. But from its monadic aspect, it comes in 2025, and there will be an influx of fourth ray egos, he does tell us. From another angle, however, it is always active and ever-present because it is the ray which governs the fourth kingdom of nature, the human kingdom, in the three worlds of strictly human evolution, you know, which we say not super human evolution, as is found on the Buddhic and Atmic planes. Okay, so we don't have so many fourth ray egos, but maybe in those countries where the fourth ray is the ruling soul ray, some disciples can be found, maybe Brazil, Germany, where else? Austria, Japan. I'm trying to think if there are any others. I know those have the fourth ray soul, and he particularly points out the kind of work that's done in the United Nations. It's a Scorpio organization in a way. At least United Nations Day is celebrated in Scorpio, and there is the major distributor of the fourth ray, and of course harmony through conflict is the major energy which is animating the United Nations. It has to deal with all of these tremendous conflicts in the human family, again a number four, and bring them to some degree of harmony. So it would be a perfect place for at least some of the more advanced fourth ray souls to come in and do their work. But in general, it's not in incarnation, though starting from 2025, from its monadic aspect, whatever that really means, how many egos that brings in, one does not know, but would it be the fourth ray monads that come in, because you can have monads on rays 1 through 7, or would it be also an open door for the fourth ray egos to enter? among which there are probably many in terms of people who are not yet all that advanced, because, you know, the earlier influx of egos with a capital E were on 4, 5, 6, or 7, invariably same as personalities. So if people have not switched off 4, 5, 6, or 7, it does not necessarily mean that they are not advanced, because some disciples can do that. They can retain 4, 5, 6, or 7 and still take the fourth initiation. But in general, there's a movement towards 3, 2, 1, a movement towards 3 at the time of growing human intelligence, and at the time of the first initiation or thereabouts, it's possible to switch on to the second or the first ray soul, as I presently understand it, my present level of ignorance, as they say. Okay. It is the dominant energy always exerting pressure upon the fourth kingdom, you know, and this is, you might say here, by the principle of numerical resonance. This pressure began to exert itself primarily towards the end of the fourth human race, the Atlantean race of men. Well, you would think, you know, given the war, given the great Atlantean war, one would think that the warlike fourth ray would be asserting itself before that. But maybe he means in terms of its higher possibilities. We do know, or we are told anyway, and how would we know if we weren't told, that the Christ and the Buddha took the third initiation in the fourth ray ashram in Atlantis, which meant that they both were fourth ray souls and not the second ray souls they are now. And there's an example of how you can be on a ray of aspect, excuse me, a ray of attribute, and still take a high initiation. So anyway, this pressure began to exert itself primarily towards the end of the fourth human race, the Atlantean race. Now, there's a million years ago or so, the Aryan race began in earnest, but there was an overlapping period. You know, just consult the work of Philip Lindsay, The Hidden History of Humanity, and he gives a very clear idea of these overlapping energies. At that time, men began to give evidence of a growing sense of responsibility and therefore of the power to demonstrate discriminative choice. Now, on the fourth subplane, okay, I think, can I write that in? So we'll do it that way. On the fourth subplane of the mental plane, okay, F-O-U, oh, how did I do that? Sorry, haste makes waste, you know, F-R. So it's the fourth subplane, F-O-U-R-T-H, subplane. Haste makes waste, so, right. F-O-U-R, fourth subplane of the mental plane, we find what faculty, what city, so to speak, we find faculty of discrimination, precisely what is being discussed here. So let's just say a discriminative choice. This involves discriminative choice between the personality and the soul and the energies of these two. So this, well, this is interesting. He talks about this as the end of the fourth race. This led to the great war in the fourth race. And my question here is, was this war at the end of the fourth root race, or more in the middle, given the fourth sub race, SBR, okay, second ray, SBRC. So this will be a chance to SBRC sub race. Okay. More in the middle, you know, at the 4 of 4, possibly, due to the incoming of those intelligent egos from the moon chain. And there were a number of the floods, so for the precise details, more than DK discusses in the historical context, we have to have what he discussed with Blavatsky in The Secret Doctrine, the several floods, or at least the few floods which did occur. Anyway, here he talks about the end of the fourth human race, and the question is, was the war and the great sinking occurring at the end of the fourth root race? And I'm going to kind of correct this a little bit, and we'll call it fourth root race. Maybe that'll be just a little clearer. Okay. otherwise, it looks like root trace. Okay. So anyway, this led to the Great War of the Fourth Race. It was said to have been, is this true, fought out about 20 miles south of Delhi on a great plain. Was that true? At least that's how the story goes. So, this is what we're going to try to find out when this war occurred. It seemed that the possibility for discrimination came in the 4 of 4, fourth sub-race of the fourth root race, and that increased pressure towards initiation occurred in the sub-fifth race of the fourth root race. And, of course, with men advancing in that way against the wishes of the Black Lodge, then we had a real problem, and the war would be precipitated. Anyway, it culminated in the flood to which all parts of the world testify and to which the majority of the world scriptures bear evidence. And we have to, you know, for deeper research, remember there were more than one flood. There was a flood which sank Poseidonis. Maybe it was about 11,000 BC, something like that. Or was it 11,000 years ago, one or the other? There was a flood 270,000 years ago, flood sinking Poseidonis. I'm not sure I spelled that correctly. Poseidonis, and maybe get rid of the E. Well, yeah, I'm not going to go searching for that. That's how it's pronounced, Poseidonis. Another 270,000 years ago, and another maybe 4 million years ago. I may be leaving one out. I know that Blavatsky makes a big deal talking about the several floods. DK seems to be simplifying it, or at least referring to the major flood, and he seems to say that it was at the end of the fourth root race, sometimes with the great number of Atlantean consciousnesses we have with us at the moment. You kind of wonder whether the fourth root race has even ended. In that era, in which the then known world of men was extensively involved, then known to those who constituted the civilization at that time, maybe there were other areas that were not known well, in which the then known world of men was extensively involved, the black and white lodges of adepts were also implicated, and the first major fight between the demonstrators of evil and the forces of light took place. Mm-hmm. Well, the lords of the dark face and the lords of the shining countenance, as they have been called. And, you know, there have been fights and skirmishes all along, but this is the question, you know, did this great battle occur a million years ago, or did it occur more like 4 million years ago? And 4 million years ago, had we reached really the end of the fourth root race? So this requires some, you know, historical investigation, and I would, you know, trust Philip on this, go to his book or talk to him about his understanding of this timing. Now, this great battle, let's just call it, you know, whenever it occurred. Okay, so whenever it occurred, it was a great battle. And some have said that, you know, even atomic weapons or advanced weaponry was used in this battle. There is a tradition about the release of weapons of tremendous power, and some of this has been taken up in the modern film industry, and, you know, sort of developed as an interesting idea about the advanced science of earlier times. Now, this battle, says the Tibetan, it was inconclusive, with the evidence for defeat to be found on the side of the good more than on the side of evil. We do know one thing, that at this time, hierarchy withdrew. At this time and after this great battle, hierarchy withdrew from its more open contact with humanity. And then, of course, in a way, humanity had to earn its way back, and now we have, interestingly, have had a recrudescence of that battle on a higher turn of the spiral in the Aryan Age, and DK even told us that the same principles, principal players, protagonists, were involved. Can you imagine Churchill and FDR and Hitler all as Atlanteans involved in that great battle? But one day, when we can read the record and see the progress of the soul and its various personalities, perhaps all of that will come home clearly to us. Under the symbolism of the flood, it is apparent to the students that the fight was focused primarily upon the astral plane. So it was a fight involving, should we say, which desires would triumph. Though fought out historically upon the physical plane, probably in a specific location, as I said, there is reputedly a great plain south of Delhi, India, where this occurred, and we can imagine that what we now call India had a very great role in the Atlantean civilization, though strangely, you know, Atlantis covered the world in a way. It wasn't just like a little island. And DK says that the present United States of America is the center of the old Atlantean continent. So there is a whole study of theosophical geography that is put forward by certain seers, and we can at least look at what some of these seers thought that the land masses looked like in Lemurian times, much farther south to a degree, Atlantean times, covering the world really, and now in Aryan times. It resulted in the destruction of the world by water, as it might be symbolically expressed. And HBB tells us about one of the phases of the war, maybe much later, where the black sorcerers, tried to reach their flying machines, which were called the Imanas. But they had been hypnotized by the forces of light and could not reach the machines because of the water. Well, you know, that's an interesting and rather exciting story to be found in the secret doctrine. And, you know, if we're masters, we can read the record and see to what extent these things are reflected in the record. DK read the record for St. Paul to confirm whether he had indeed been blinded for 3 days on the road to Damascus. And apparently the record confirmed this. So these cities will open up when our vehicles are ready and when we can be trusted. In the climaxing war of the immediate past, and so, you know, let's say this was written after the World War II, the mental plane was the focus of the amalgamated forces, for the war was in reality a clash of ideologies, and we need the mental plane for there to be ideologies, and has been far more the result of man's thinking than of his emotional desires. Well, certainly the technology involved much thinking. In the old Atlantean days, there was technology, but we are told that the people themselves didn't really create the technology. They only used it, and the higher souls and the guides of the race and those who were more advanced due to much development in previous times were the ones really responsible for providing the methods by which that technology could occur. Well, anyway, in the modern times, humanity itself produced the technology without the least obvious assistance of the guides of the race. So this war, this World War II, was really a clash of ideologies and has been far more the result of man's thinking. After all, you might say we are in the thinking Aryan race. excuse me. It therefore automatically involved the three levels of human activity and was fought out upon the physical plane. So, it therefore automatically involved the three levels, okay. The complete dweller, we might say, the three-headed dog, Kerebus, and fought out on the physical plane, though it was impulsed from the mental plane, the intention to have one theology triumph over the others. Well, what did we have? We had democracy, we had fascism, communism, FAS, communism. Those are maybe the main ideologies that were involved in the war. The symbol of fire was this time, so it was quite close to the time DK was writing, this time involved, instead of water, even if he was writing at the before the war had really played out entirely, we knew, and he knew, that by the time the sun moved northward in 1942 at the December solstice, the war had been won. So he could be referring, even if the war was still raging in its final days, that it was the previous war, so to speak. The symbol of fire was this time involved instead of water, and this fire led to the destruction of men and of cities by fire, literally fire from heaven. Of course, initiation is also called fire from heaven. So the different kinds of fires, but these were the fires by friction from heaven. By the evocation of the fiery emotions so prevalent in the councils of men at this time, see, he seems to be referring to a time when the war might still be raging. I'd have to check and see when this particular section of the book was written. And by the drought of the year 1947, well, it had to have been after the war then, didn't it? Because otherwise he wouldn't have known about that. So necessarily after World War II, which burnt up the terrain in Europe and in Great Britain, being curiously enough preceded by the floods and waters of the earlier spring. So there was a replay of the sequence of water and fire, thus evidencing the repetition of cycles, he says. Yes. So this repetition is distinctive of natural process. What do they say in biology? Ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny. Basically, we all carry with us the complete history of the evolution of form, which has led to the present form which we occupy. So this repetition is distinctive of natural process, leaving each stage of man's evolution depicted, but producing a climaxing point, which is indicative of the past and of the present, but leaving, as is the case today, the future locked in the determinative processes of man's thinking and planning. So what will be the future forms? Very much up to man's free will. Though I'm sure that in the mind of Sanatkumara, the kinds of archetypal forms which are to emerge have been thought through. But the degree to which we conform to those possibilities and achieve them is up to the clarity of man's thinking. So the past and the present are indicated in our present forms, and we have a certain control over the conformity of our future forms to that which is intended. As man thinks and decides in his heart, and we also have to remember in a statement like this, the quote, heart is really the soul, so will the future of humanity prove to be, for it is the same process for mankind as a whole as for the individual. So there are archetypes, but to what degree will we conform to the benevolent intended archetypes? That is a question. Anyway, yes, so now that is answered. At least I don't have to go on a hunt there. This part of the book was written after World War II because it speaks of the drought of 47, 2 years after the war ended. And we're talking about fire. Well, you know, it is said that the attempt will be made to destroy the Aryan race by fire. You know, fire is the symbol of the mind, and the Aryan race is the mental race. The question is, has that already occurred in what some consider to have been the Armageddon of the Second World War, or is there a danger that it will yet occur? We certainly do have the weaponry to make it a possible future danger. I would like to cover the theme by dividing my subject into the following parts, he says. One, the particular type of energy. Now, this is, you know, we are speaking of the fourth ray and the fourth initiation. So, the particular type of energy involved and its initiatory effect. This concerns the principle of conflict as contained in the activity of this fourth ray. So, the lower part of the fourth ray is that which demonstrates conflict, and the higher part, that which demonstrates harmony. And then number two, the effect upon humanity as a whole. The renunciation initiation is an expression of the result of the activity of this principle. You know, we might say, finally, the higher aspect wins, and the lower aspect is renounced. Then, point three, the factor of the second ray of love wisdom, as it basically controls ray four. Well, it's certainly on that line, and he said there was a particular relationship between ray one and ray two, 2102, between ray two and ray four, 2204, and between ray three and ray six for the same reason, 2306, at least among the sequence of rays. The factor of the second ray of love wisdom, as it basically controls ray four and implements the return of the Christ, because the potency of the heart center is involved. Now, this is interesting, initiation four involves the heart center, which is ruled by the second ray of love wisdom. Okay. Point number four, the effect of this ray four in the modern world of nations and of fundamental organizations. These are rather long sections that DK is undertaking, and he's expanding the whole theme of initiation to include humanity as a whole. Number five, the result of fourth ray activity upon the individual disciple in the three aspects of his nature, physical, emotional, mental, okay, upon the soul-infused personality. So this involves the number five along with the four. The summation of the whole theme and a forecast of future possibilities. So it will be a lengthy section, which we are now getting ready to undertake. I shall attempt to deal with this as concisely as possible, and will keep the handling of the subject exceedingly brief, or as brief as its historical importance will permit and its definitive angle will allow. You know, so often DK's brevity can seem like a great tome to us. I think he said that he wrote with brevity in A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, and there is a monumental thesis of over 1,200 or 1,300 pages and involves a lifetime of study for us limited human beings. The whole of human history has been conditioned by the fourth ray of harmony through conflict, and it is this ray which has determined the ring pass knot within which humanity must work. Okay. So it has been, you know, from the time we entered the fourth kingdom, this ray has been decisively conditioning. Lower influences INFL at first and higher later. And maybe we're only now learning how to respond to higher influences of the ray. Okay, so, right. At this time, the effect of the ray is predominantly of a group nature. Okay, because we, you know, there are not yet many individual ray four souls, and there are, except in the ranks of disciples of the Great White Lodge, no fourth ray souls in incarnation. So the ordinary non-aspiring, okay, fourth ray soul is not yet in incarnation in this cycle, but certain fourth ray disciples are. So FRDS, and that would be fourth ray disciples. Whoop, D-I-S-C-C-I-P-L-E-S. Okay. Once humanity has decided upon the goal and the method of reconstruction, I suppose after the war, right? and of reorganization, which is to take place within the periphery of the fourth ray ring pass knot, which includes humanity. includes the human kingdom. Then, if humanity's decision is correct and is not postponed, as now it seems to be, many fourth ray souls will resume incarnation and so implement the human decision, presumably towards harmony. we can say here, PRBL, PRB, S, no. Well, I'll just write it out. Okay. Presumably, towards harmony. This will mark a great turning point in human history and will enable seventh ray energy to be turned to the best advantage. So decisions in relation to the fourth ray will facilitate or not the work of the of the seventh ray. Right. So has that decision been made? It does seem like there are a great many delays, a great many dangers at this time. It does seem that what the Christ said about the man who swept his house clean of, how many devils was it? Was it 20 or was it unnamed number? But he swept his house clean of devils and he had then, because he didn't pay attention, maybe twice as many come back. Are we in that position now? But anyway, this is the immediate future, and many fourth ray souls now, whether they, you know, what will be their degree of advancement, they're not all disciples. Now, disciples on the fourth ray do exist in small numbers, but later, more average people will come in and face the possibility of discipleship. Okay. Sorry. There's a little bit of a roughness, of course, to how I'm doing this, but given the time that's available at this stage of my life, I guess I have to do it this way. Now, we're talking about the particular type of energy involved and its initiatory effect. And I suppose, you know, in a way I'm beginning this little section, but when we take it up in number 81, I will probably review just a little bit. Here we are confronted with a basic problem, that is the nature of the principle of conflict, which is the outstanding characteristic of this fourth ray of harmony through conflict. And I want to say at first and in the lower regard. He says that the conflict energy expresses the lower part of the ray, somewhere he says this, and the harmony part, the higher part of the ray. This is by no means an easy subject to handle, just as the fourth ray life is fairly difficult and confused, or to make clear. For the correctness of conflict, its naturally separative and eliminative effect, the one who wins persists and the one who loses goes off the playing field, and its power to condition not only humanity, but also the hierarchy will have to be considered. Well, on our planet, maybe there is a correctness to conflict. It has a separative and eliminative effect, and it conditions not only humanity, but hierarchy, which is the heart center of our planet, and is also related to the number four, as will all heart centers be. When we study the fourth initiation, that of renunciation, the effect of its activity will emerge more clearly. So at the fourth degree, there is a climaxing effect of the fourth ray on humanity. Of course, these ray energies, they do continue, and they go far beyond the ray lords, which are in Shambhala, and which are our immediate source of the ray energies. We are reaching the end of this program. Fundamentally, this fourth ray is that which is responsible for the strains and stresses, you know, the push and pull, the kind of worrying or tearing of the fabric, and for the initial conflict between the major pairs of opposites to which we give the name spirit and matter. So there is a built-in conflict, which is engineered, conflict between the pairs of opposites, which is engineered by the fourth ray. It is this fourth ray energy which makes apparent the distinction so often misunderstood by man between good and evil. You know, the fighting out of the opposites in various pairs of opposites, especially the opposites involving that which is high and that which is low. In Atlantean days, the leaders of men under the influence of this paramount fourth ray energy, because it was the fourth root race, because it was the fourth root race, made a decision which laid the emphasis upon the matter aspect, according to their desire and their emotional reaction, which is present in the essential duality of manifestation, and thus inaugurated the age of materialism. So this is the origin, interestingly enough, origin of our present materialistic civilization. Now he tells us that the First World War, what we call it, was fought out to overcome the prevailing tendency towards materialism and was somewhat successful in that regard. But anyway, there were, you know, always with the fourth ray, there are decisions. So always with the fourth ray, there are important decisions. And materialism was then the emphasis. This age has wrought itself out through its accompanying greeds, hate, separativeness, aggression. Let's just say these are all factors we strongly recognize now. Okay. So, during the present century, the materialism led to the World War, which was in reality the expression of a shifting orientation, and therefore, to a certain extent, of the coming triumph of good. So let's just say that if the tendency away from materialism was not showing itself, then the war, then World War I would not have occurred, and then World War II. So the good was stirring, and this evoked the war. Okay. Now, this is a lengthy paragraph, and we are already at the point where we can say that we have done about an hour's worth. So let's just say that this is the end of Rays and Initiations, webinar commentary number 80. Today is the 3rd of March. Okay. And, well, we're on a certain page, I'm sure. I think it was 602 to 606. So we began on page 602, and we've gone to page 606. And we will continue with Rays and Initiations webinar commentary number 81, and starting on page 606, whenever we can restart. So, and I'll do a little bit of a review here. He's giving us a bit of a history of this fourth ray in relation to humanity and its conflicts and its development, because after all, it is the great ray which has ruled our fourth kingdom of nature since its inception and is always present in that regard. So we do have to think of the wholeness of humanity in relation to the functioning of this ray. Okay, we'll see you then shortly. Thank you for studying along with me here. That's what this really is. It's a big study opportunity, a thinking opportunity. When DK presents his words, we can just sort of accept them at face value and memorize them, or we can think and we can connect what he says with what we already know or think we know. Okay, we'll be back. See you soon. Bye-bye.